Hey there, we're the Westlaw Pirates and welcome to the show. We're here to share our thoughts on Northwestern athletics and college sports with thoughts and analysis from the visceral to the statistical. We run our tailgate with the red pirate flag flying high above as we give no quarter, especially the fourth. I'm Sam Walter.
I'm John Lacombe, and he's Scott Sepich.
I am.
He is, yes. Scuzz is off today. Kind of a rough one to be off on, considering that it is now the second consecutive Northwestern entry into the NCAA tournament.
Let's go!
As we do every year, welcome in Scott Sepich to our bracketology pod. Scott, always a pleasure to have you. It's great to have you back yet again this year. And, we've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about.
Yes, for the 28th consecutive year, I'm here.
You're our Greg Gumbel, Scott.
It only seemed like 28th consecutive year. It's always good to be back, and it always seems like each year travels by quicker. So,
and actually, it's half 28. It is the 14th year.
14.
Just right off the top, Northwestern catching the 9 seed in the East, early round matchup. Actually, it's the first game of the day on Friday. That 11:15 a.m. Central start against Florida Atlantic, and with a matchup against presumably, I'm not going to, put the cart before the horse too much, but unless Stetson brings all of their hats,
don't sleep on the Hatters. Come on.
You got the number one overall seed UConn just kind of sitting there, waiting for presumably again. 16 seeds have beaten 1 seeds as recently as last year, and we can ask Purdue all about that.
Big upsets have happened, Sam. Put a pin in that. We're going to return to that later on, much later on. But hey, before we even get into that too, how wild was it? I think back to 2015, and I'm trying to remember when exactly it broke down last year, but I feel like our bid was announced somewhat late last year. Wasn't it? And we were extremely late in 2015, and it was, or 2016.
It was 2017, wasn't it?
Or was it the 2017? They clearly deliberately announced it late that year, because they knew they were putting us in and they knew everyone was waiting for it. And it feels like they deliberately did us as early as possible this time. It seriously felt that. It was this time Northwestern gets out of the way immediately. And I think we were all kind of taken by surprise when it first happened. But yeah, it was awesome. It was just cool to have it done like that.
Yeah, I actually thought that the reveal was at 3:30 my time. I'm on the West Coast. Not 3. So I missed it.
Oh no.
I turned it on at 3:10 or something my time, and it was they had already announced the entire East bracket. So I was now I can't watch the rest of the bracket waiting for us, because then I'll be worried that something went wrong. So I had to go on Twitter and be oh, okay, we made it, so I can at least rest easy. But I totally missed the actual reveal, because
it was amazing.
They're not going to reveal us first, right? And then they totally did.
they absolutely did. Yeah,
they shouted out Greg Gumbel, who couldn't make it, who's not able to participate in the coverage this year. And if not for the fact that they all said kind words about him, they would have got into it in the first 30 seconds. They dove in so fast. Before any of us could even blink, Northwestern was in the tournament. But better that than we're all Wildcat fans. That's way too easy on our heart. I think we don't even really know what to do with a situation like that, but whatever, yeah. I'll take it.
But right off the top, what do we know about FAU? I mean, what's so interesting is,
How was their tournament last year? They do anything notable last
year? Little bit, yeah. it's so wild. You think theoretically, we could see 3 of the 4 teams who made the Final Four last year in a row.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, they're all in the first 3 games on top left.
Yeah.
So FAU to me is both kind of scary to play, and also at the same time, I don't know if they're that good. Which I had read some stuff today about how, like, if FAU didn't come into this to the season ranked in the top 10 because of what they did last year, their actual resume might not have gotten them in because they had some weird losses to sort of, even though they won 25 games and give them credit for that, but they had some weird losses and didn't play in a great conference. And but they did beat Arizona, so they have, like, some good results in there, and they played some tough games. But
well, I don't think Temple
yeah, I don't
shaved,
know.
I don't
I
think
don't
Temple
know.
Shaved any points against him on the on their way.
Yeah, they lost at Temple. Yeah. They lost, like, I think they lost to Bryant early in the year. I mean, not that we can talk. We know who we lost to, but, like,
Who do we?
But they had
we
a
did
couple of
not.
weird ones.
We did not lose to a single conference team in the non-conference.
That's true.
There's not a single member of a conference that Northwest
Well, no,
Northwestern
or
lost.
I would choose to say that we lost to the independent conference champion.
Yeah, there you
What I
go.
would say.
Yeah, well, and then Temple. I mean, that's the whole, like, bizarre thing, right? Like, for like none of us know the details, but I'm like, if you wanted to sell me on they caught Temple right when Temple just like was forced to stop shaving points and thus were totally unprepared for Temple basketball, like, who knows? But yeah, like, right when they were on, they did beat Arizona. Kind of along the lines of what you were saying, Scott, I almost feel like a comp for them is like Maryland. Like, I wonder if they were in the like if they were in the Big Ten this year, would they have slotted out somewhere like around a team like Maryland, where like there is one incandescent guard that no one on the other team can stop. And then aside from that, it's like, well, you know, if you can kind of deal with anything else that they do on the defensive end and you can't contain that guy, but you can deal with everyone else around him and do your kind of game, and will that be enough? Like, I don't know. I mean, and maybe that's selling FAU short, and obviously this is a team that went to the Final Four last year, but I do feel like they're, and obviously Jonell Davis is the AAC Player of the Year. Like, this guy is an unbelievable player and led them to the Final Four last year. So, but again, I do feel like we have plenty of experience playing big time guards who can, who can really light it up and being like, okay, but on our end, what we'll do is going to be enough. Like, I feel like that's workable.
That said, I do have a concern, and it is a 7-foot-1 center out of Nalchik, Russia, Vladislav Golden, who went for 15.6 points per game this season, was their leading scorer in pretty much every game down the stretch.
Yeah, so I'm concerned about, Vlad Golden as well. He was big for their run last year, and without us having Matt Nicholson there, I'm not super confident about Hunger and Blake Preston with him, and also I'm figuring that they're going to be really focusing in on getting the ball inside to him and establishing that early probably. So definitely that's a concern.
I agree. I think, and of course, the Nicholson, look, theoretically, we don't know whether he's coming back. We also all saw that he wheeled himself out into the selection show and then could not stand up with the rest of his teammates to celebrate the bid. So I think, we can all apply common sense here and be like, yes, Matt Nicholson is probably not going to be available. Right, I think you could draw parallels to like the Purdue games, right? And be like, look, right, I don't think we're not going to have an answer for him in the low block, and it's just going to be about doing what we do. And I think, like, credit to the team, right? Like, from credit to the team this season, I think everyone needs to stop and realize that, like, look, what happened in the Wisconsin game was not typical. There were a lot of crazy balls that did not drop for Brooks and did not drop for Nicky Buckets against Wisconsin, and that's not typical. Like, those guys get buckets, and of course we know what Boo does, we know what Langborg does, and I think we just have to be confident that those guys are going to be able to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree in the sense that I think that, like you said, it was unusual for both Brooks and Nick to be missing a lot of shots, and then of course Langborg got into foul trouble, and so like a lot went wrong after the early explosion by Boo in that game that was a little bit unusual for us. So I think we can take something out of that in terms of being like that probably won't happen again. I think Boo's going to, you know, Boo will do his thing. Boo will do the Boo stuff. But like, to me, to win this game, like Brooks and then, you know, either Ryan or Nick are going to have big games on the offensive end and make shots, because FAU is a team that scores a lot. And, you know, I would have rather played a team that wanted to get more into a rock fight, because I think we can do that, you know. And I know that we shot well this year, and we did offensively pretty well this year, but teams that are more offensive minded, I worry a little bit about. And I know that's, you know, FAU is a team that can score points in bunches.
Yeah, I think at the same time, though, you may be totally right, and that's, you know, that it's a level of pace that we're not as accustomed to. But I do think on the flip side, like, the level of the Big Ten, the level of the defense that's played in the Big Ten, I do think, especially with two really physical players in Brooks and Nick, who are able to look and be like, oh, I have the ability to really bang. And, you know, I'm comfortable banging in a way that maybe these guys just don't see at that level. I mean, that's the hope anyway. I was going to say earlier, though, and you mentioned him. Boo, of course, was just absolutely on fire in that game. And if it wouldn't have been just him on fire in that game, like, you know, maybe the tail against Wisconsin would have been a little different. But
yeah,
I was thinking earlier, I mean, like, I'm bummed Scuzz isn't here for this, because this is a specific drum that Scuzz has been beating all season, which was when everyone was kind of hand-wringing over a potential bid for Northwestern, Scuzz would always be like, look, we have a pretty good overall profile, and if there is a tiebreaker necessary, the tiebreaker is and will always be Boo Booey, because he's the exact kind of player the tournament committee wants in this tournament. And this is like exhibit A of that whole situation. We're the first game on Friday of the Friday slate, and the tournament gets to roll out Boo Booey versus John L. Davis to start that day off. It is everything they want in a mano-a-mano matchup. And it's like, you know, like, I'm excited. Like, I'd be excited if I wasn't affiliated with one of these two teams. And, you know, those two guys are going to go at each other, and it's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, and you've got Boo being, you know, from upstate New York, but from New York, and having probably a lot of family and friends in attendance. And certainly if we were able to advance to Sunday and probably be playing UConn, and, you know, definitely UConn will have, you know, a huge presence there. But I think we're going to have a good against Florida Atlantic. I assume we're going to have more fans there. Because we have a lot of alumni in New York and the East Coast, and I think that, you know, the NU fans will show up, and I'm not worried at all about being, not having the fan advantage.
Someone who attended the Pinstripe Bowl, I am very confident that we're going to show out in major numbers for this game.
I think you're right. I've been looking at flights. I live in Portland, Oregon, for people who don't know that. So it's a bit of a challenge to get there, but I'm looking at, because I went to Sacramento last year. I went to Salt Lake in 2017. This is the first time that I'd, you know, have to go like a lot further, but I'm trying to figure it out. I don't know if it's going to happen or not.
Yeah. You have to leave Big Ten country and travel all the way to New York City,
which is also Big Ten country.
Which is also, yeah, that's Rutgers' backyard, really the heart of Big Ten country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just have to make a flight that, you know, the softball team from Oregon's going to have to make next year to Rutgers anyway. So,
if you or a loved one is seriously injured by someone else's negligence, hire Kent Simpson of the Simpson Law Group. After over a decade prosecuting murder cases in Chicago, Simpson opened his own firm focused on wrongful death and personal injury cases. He specializes in car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and other transportation accidents, as well as construction accidents, medical negligence, slip and falls, product liability, and more. Millions recovered for clients. No fee unless he wins. The Simpson Law Group. Compassion, empathy, and vigorous advocacy. Go to SensenLawGroup.com or call 312-332-2107 for a free consultation, and go Cats.
So should we, I feel like we've done our due diligence talking about FAU and this super exciting game. Dare we look at what might lay behind? Of course, I'm talking about Stetson. Dare we? dare we look at the second round matchup? It's difficult to talk about this UConn team without just starting to laugh. Like, it's not like it's all like all you can do is laugh. I don't even know where to begin.
I mean, so
yeah.
Yeah. They're insane. It's going to be again, assuming we get past round 1, because like I'm looking at the early game odds, right? We opened up as a 1.5 point favorite. It has since switched to FAU by 2.5. So, you know, ESPN's matchup predictor has FAU as 53.5% winning percentage. So, I mean, right down the middle. To me, it's really going to be, can we stymie their interior game and maybe force them to play our game? If we can force them to play outside, then, we can get that Bowie Davis matchup and see what happens.
Yeah, hopefully. I think we're dealing with the depth issues. I mean, it is what it is. I think we know the caliber of our starting unit, but we know that we're going to be working with depth. But I mean, I think if you look at UConn, you compare Northwestern and UConn.
Wait,
you'd be like, okay.
John, but before we get into UConn, something just struck me is that we are going to Willis Reed's backyard.
That's all she like. Matt Nicholson might wheel himself out and tie Barry for the round. Like, wheels, hey, maybe they let him have that rolling thing out on the court. And he's, look, if he's available.
If he can just stand there against Vlad Golden and take 5 fouls. I mean,
that's what I was going to say. Same with UConn, if those 5 fouls are available. I did want to bring up, though, that, Northwestern, because of the injuries, is really confined to 4 major scoring options, right, that we could expect to be getting our buckets from against UConn. But on the flip side, UConn only has 5 guys who are projected to be selected in the upcoming NBA draft. So it kind of evens out. It's so funny. I was joking beforehand because we're talking about the difficulty of stopping FAU's big. And I was looking and be like, we have no way of stopping either Alex Caravan or Donovan Clingan. Like either of them, we have no option, let alone both of them in the same game. And neither of those 2 guys are the 2 guys who were first team all Big East selections for UConn this season. It's, including as if it couldn't be like Northwestern killer Cam Spencer is on this team now and is a first team all Big East selection. They're 31-3. They're the defending national champions.
Yeah, according to KenPom, Cam Spencer is the best offensive player in the country by offensive rating.
Yeah, and based on our personal experience, I'm not expecting him to cool down when he plays Northwestern.
It's a bad matchup. I mean, I think back to 2017 when we won the first game, we played Gonzaga, and Gonzaga went. We know what happened in that game, and Zach Collins and the whole thing with the ball through the hoop or the hand through the hoop. But like Gonzaga did make the national championship that year, but you came in being like, well, Gonzaga had a history of sort of underachieving, and when they're 1 seed, people always have kind of doubts of them. And this time around, though, if we make that game, we really are up against it. And the 1-1 seed that I actually felt good about us playing is the one we can't, which is Purdue. even though I don't feel as great about it if Matt wasn't there, obviously, to help handle Edie, but But I didn't like when I kept seeing like we're either going to play UConn or Houston, and I didn't like seeing either of those teams in the second round. But that's what you get for being an 8 or 9 seed. And it's, you know, you're going to get stuck with.
Would North Carolina have made you feel any better?
I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe I'm still like picturing last year North Carolina, even though I know that they're much better this year. So there was just something about UConn and Houston that I was just like, I hope we avoid those two teams, but we're, you know, that's just hard to avoid them.
I mean, it's if you're trying to find a path for UConn, you can't look at it from a perspective of what they have and what they can do. You don't go down that rabbit hole of thinking about it like that. You have to have magical thinking, right? You have to USA, USSR hockey this team and be like, we get a little bit of luck and our guys are absolutely shooting the ball, like shooting the lights out. Like,
yeah, we make everything, they make nothing. And then, you know, then we win.
Right. And then play tight.
Hey, Sam. I was going to say, but I know we talked about FAU a lot, but I was going to say, you know, the FAU story, this is kind of this continuation for FAU of this thing that started last year in the tournament where they played a first round game as an 8. I think they were a 9 seed last year. And they were behind by 1, I believe, late in the game against Memphis. And Memphis had the ball and called a timeout multiple times that was not recognized by the official, and then FAU forced a held ball and then scored a last second bucket to win by 1. If that hadn't happened, we wouldn't even know who these guys are. Like, they would have just lost in the first round and we wouldn't know anything about them, really. But then they win that game. In the second round, they get to play Fairleigh Dickinson, who beat Purdue, right? The 16 seed. So then they get past that one. And then all of a sudden they have this path that gets them, you know, to this place. They have this great run. Now everybody's like, oh, they're a top 10 team this year, you know? And people have been talking about them all year, like they're supposed to be one of the best teams. And they haven't proven to be that. And it's just funny how there's so many examples of this over the years, like how thin the margin is between being a team that is completely forgotten and a team that everybody knows about. And FAU is kind of that team where they were one timeout away last year from being completely irrelevant. And instead they made the Final Four.
It's funny in that regard, like in a way of sort of starting to tee up this week's Lake the Post segment, but that makes me think of last week's Lake the Post segment that we talked about on last week's pod, where we were talking about like this kind of bizarre push and pull between, like, because of our collective Northwestern history, like this is the moment where Northwestern Nation breathes a huge sigh of relief and goes, hey, you know, the last two Boo years will always be back-to-back tourney seasons. Like, mission accomplished, anything else is gravy. Where it's like,
yeah,
as Scott eloquently just pointed out, now is the time when things happen that can make a team legendary.
So true.
Like, yeah, like, who knows, right? And as Scott clearly just mapped out, like, you know, a uncalled FAU timeout at the end of this game gives Northwestern a win, and then we get by Stetson in round two, the exact path you're mapping out, and into the Sweet 16 that we go.
Yeah, why not us, right?
Exactly. Which I guess, John, that would be a great pivot into our weekly Lake the Post segment brought to you by Teamworks Media. You know, we were talking before about all of the historical, I mean, the history is there to be made right now, right? You know, back-to-back, you know, tournaments for the first time ever. Obviously, you know, when you're talking, you know, Northwestern and tournament, there's a lot of first time evers. Being that this is our third time in the tournament ever, but you know, two back to backs, you know, with this team, with this player. I mean, the fact that, you know, Rafael Davis is like collecting, you know, loose change to start building the statue for Boo during the Big Ten tournament. That's just, tells you everything there is to tell you about, you know, arguably, and you wouldn't really have to argue that much about the best player in Northwestern basketball history. But I mean, the history is there to be written.
Absolutely. And it's funny, Boo even replied, like responded to Rafael Davis's tweet on that, being like, basically like, I'm on board. And we're like, which is like, that's so Boo. And it's fantastic. Boo, like, you can just see Boo being like, yeah, build me a damn statue. be like, absolutely, man, let's do it. But yes, in the interest of history, just all of you sit back and come on this journey with me. Of this Mona Lisa that I'm going to paint for you right now. So as Sam just alluded to, Northwestern just put this back-to-back tourney bids together. We'll always remember, it's like the two Boo teams, like back-to-back, Northwestern goes to the tourney, and this will take its place alongside, you know, several of these great two-year runs. And last year we talked about, you know, like softball, the 2 years that they put up right now. Like, you could throw in like where lacrosse is right now and what they're trying to do. But most famously, obviously, we all think of the Rose Bowl season followed by the Citrus Bowl season, the back-to-back Big Ten titles in 1995 and 1996. Well, in 1996, when Northwestern was completing the second half of that football dual season, the reigning national champion in basketball was the UCLA Bruins. And like UConn, UCLA had a star-studded roster full of names that everybody knew, featuring prominently the brother of an NBA player. On that UCLA team, it was Charles O'Bannon, brother of Ed O'Bannon. And as everyone knows, on UConn, it's Cam Spencer, brother of Golden State Warrior Pat Spencer. So we can obviously see the NBA parallels here. And of course, in that tournament, UCLA, the defending champion, went up against Princeton. The top assistant coach on that Princeton team, Bill Carmody. The top player on that team, Mitch Henderson. These became the Northwestern head basketball coach and the Northwestern top assistant basketball coach for many, many years. Bill Carmody was the last basketball coach before Chris Collins. And now Chris Collins will be going out against defending national champion UConn with a team starting Ryan Langborg, a transfer from Princeton, where he played for Mitch Henderson. The stars are aligning, people. The universe is talking to us, and it's telling us that this is all coming together. It's all happening, okay? You'd be a fool if you didn't read the signs. Everything is coming together for the Wildcats right now.
I love it. That's fantastic. And once again, thank you to Jay. The post segment brought to you by Teamworks Media. Very much appreciative. I know Jay is over the moon with everything going on here. I'm just watching my inbox just get flooded with his excitement about this week and where we could go from here. I do want to take a step back though and kind of look at the tournament as a whole. I know we are, as we record this, about 4 or 5 hours from the brackets dropping, and I know I haven't had a chance to study it too carefully, but Scott, is there anything that just at first glance jumps off the page at you as you take a look at this bracket?
My favorite thing about the bracket is that there's two teams called the Dukes.
Yeah.
And also Duke. So there's two Dukes and Duke. Yeah, I mean, who knew that Duquesne and James Madison would both make it in the same year? I think it's been like 50 years for Duquesne.
Yeah, Pitt doesn't make it, but Duquesne does make it. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. This was obviously like a really weird bracket year because of all of the bid stealers. And to have the play-in games be 10 seeds.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's wild. And that's because I believe Duquesne, NC State, and Oregon all occupied 11 seeds for being automatic qualifiers. And so it just pushed all of these teams that were, you know, bubble teams, like, into the 10 slot. And I don't believe we've ever seen that before, playing games with 10 seeds. And, you know, because 10 seeds actually have a pretty reasonable chance of not only winning one game, but winning two games. You have a much better chance of winning two games as a 10 seed than you do as an 8 or a 9. So, so it is interesting that those teams have now that extra game. And then I just think that there's a lot of teams in that 11, 12 range that are really good. Teams like McNeese with former LSU coach Will Wade, who...
Oh, yeah.
I forget exactly what he did to get fired, but
Will Wade was just, he was just ahead of the curve. He was openly doing NIL before NIL.
Well, that's what I was
just very forward thinking.
Yeah. So, but he's now got a 30 win team in McNeese, and you've got, you know, James Madison 31-3. You've got Grand Canyon, which is a team that's been there a few times recently. And, there were sort of like little bit of rumblings for them being an at-large candidate when they were like 20-something and one, but then they lost a few games down the stretch. But I just think it's like a kind of a toss-up when I look at a lot of these matchups. It's just really, really hard this year, even more. I mean, it's always hard, but, you know, outside of I really do think UConn and Houston are the two best teams, as badly as Houston played yesterday and getting destroyed by Iowa State, but I kind of think those are just the two best teams. But beyond that, I just think I don't know. I could see a lot of teams making runs here.
I just like I feel like last year, aside from the obvious Northwestern piece of it, that I felt like we were searching for a little bit of storyline, like some storylines. And this year, I feel like everywhere I look, I'm seeing something. Less from like I have like a super deep understanding of every one of these teams, and a lot more from just like I'm finding stories. One that I'll put up right away because I know it's going to resonate with a lot of Northwestern people is, so if we climb in the way back machine, and I would say it's not necessarily a way back machine everyone's super stoked to climb into, but we're all familiar with right after Northwestern went to that first tourney, Northwestern signed that star-studded recruiting class that featured Pete Nance, but also featured Jordan Lathan. And then we know that subsequent to events that happened, like Jordan Lathan's admission was withdrawn by Northwestern, and he never enrolled at Northwestern. Jordan Lathan then went on a six-year college basketball odyssey. He was at UTEP for 2 years. Then he didn't play, I think basically because of COVID, in the 2020-2021 season. Then he went to Wisconsin-Milwaukee for a year. Then he transferred to Morehead State last season and got hurt in preseason and never played a game for them last season, and then was a sixth-year player for Morehead State this season when he was first-team All-Ohio Valley Conference. He was one of the best players on a tournament team for Morehead State. And 1 week ago, we tweeted, there's a non-zero chance that Illinois is going to get knocked out of this tournament by Morehead State when Jordan Lathan hits a game-winning shot. And now...
We are here for that. Let's go.
And now that is... very much in the realm of possibility, because that's who Illinois drew. Illinois playing Jordan Lathan in round one, which is just, if you're a Northwestern fan, it makes the whole thing makes your head spin. But that's college basketball during the COVID era.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that every, you know, once in a while, somebody would leave your team to go to a different place and you would kind of follow them. But now it's just like, keeping up with everybody who's gone from every, even from NU now, you know, we have Ryan Young who's going to be playing for Duke in the tournament. There's Casey Simmons is on the Yale roster and they're in the tournament. So it's, you know, all these people with sort of some NU connections are still out there playing. I know you know, Robbie Barron came up short at Virginia Tech this year, and you know, Notre Dame wasn't very good with Julian Roper, but there's just a lot more guys to keep track of than there used to be. When it used to be like, oh, I mean, maybe one guy every once in a while to transfer, but now it's like, you know, every year, and yeah, keeping up with this who's where is becoming so much harder.
It's amazing. You teed me up for another one when you mentioned Ryan Young and thereby Duke, because I was thinking about this earlier tonight. I don't know that there have ever been two teams hated as much in one tournament as Duke and Purdue are collectively hated in this tournament. I honestly, like, Duke is always hated, but Duke has found, credit to them, they've found that Duke special sauce in the second half of this season, starting from the Wake Forest court storming and thereon. They've found the way to capture the hatred of the nation. And Purdue, unbelievable. I mean, I'm just like, Purdue with a giant assist from the refs. But, I mean, there is no team, even when we're not playing them, there's no team that makes you want to burn your eyeballs out more than watching the Purdue Boilermakers play basketball. And I'm just, it's wild that those two teams are in the same tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much Purdue is outside of the Big Ten realm. People have a distaste for them the way they do for Duke. So
we'll all be sitting back and waiting for everyone else to find out then.
Yeah. I mean, you know, think about, like, obviously, I kind of think Zach Edey's a pretty decent, pretty cool guy. Like, so I don't have any problem with him. In the way that I just kind of just hate watching Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer play. Like, I just, they're just like people that you just want to like, just like shove, you know, like, but,
do we know how hurt Braden
like,
Smith
Edey
is?
Like, well, I don't know, he
came back.
He wasn't out of that game
for very long.
Yeah.
Okay. He came back.
Well,
okay.
I mean, but yeah. I was specifically thinking about that, Sam, though, when he came back in, because like, that's what we all thought about Ryan Langborg, and then like the injury flared up on him. So like, you know, like, right, we'll all see. But yeah, he did come back in the game.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it was,
yeah.
To your point, Scott, it was a miracle that a Michigan State guy did not punch Lawyer at the end of that game. Like, frankly, those teams, like, it was a miracle because Lawyer was hunting for it.
Yeah, I just think I guess they've had to embrace the villain role, which is kind of funny to be a villain for a team that literally lost in the first round last year to a 16 seed.
Yeah, true.
And lost the year before that to a 15 seed in like the Sweet 16. So it's like they haven't actually won anything of note.
Yeah, they don't have the pedigree of Duke, yeah.
So I don't, you know, they've never won. They haven't been in a Final Four in my lifetime, I don't even think. So it's not like they have this, yeah, like this pedigree that Duke does, or if you, you know, some people hate Kansas or they hate Kentucky or whatever, but like, Purdue has somehow managed to be hateable without actually being,
yeah.
You know, having the results, which is pretty impressive, really. Like, what do you think?
It's amazing. I'm like, I can only imagine CBS must be like, this is just a perfect storm. Like, CBS is like, everywhere we turn, there's something that's going to draw people in. People are going to love watch. They're going to hate watch everything.
How about the Trev Alberts Derby, Nebraska A&M, round one?
Yeah,
that's right. That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's awkward. I think I saw that he tweeted. He tweeted something today, and then immediately deleted it. Like,
it's hilarious too, because we were joking about that. Where like, Trev Alberts, like, credit to him, like, Nebraska basketball has gotten really good on his watch, and women's basketball, and volleyball, and softball. I mean, volleyball has always been like ungodly good there, but all of these different sports. He brings such a pedigree in so many different sports to A&M, except the one sport all the A&M boosters are going to care about.
Yep. Yeah.
But hey, I mean, you're going to have a deep, diverse athletics program. That's great, A&M. You should rejoice in that.
Which nobody in Texas gives two craps about.
Yeah. Hey, whatever. God love them. Speaking of, yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, I'm a fan of Nebraska ball. Like, they're my favorite Big Ten team other than us. I like Tominaga. I also liked that our guys kind of clowned on him during their turn. I thought it was funny. But I enjoy them in a way that I don't know. I feel like they're kind of closer to us in terms of fighting for respect. And yeah, for some reason they don't bug me really at all. Obviously I'd like to win we play them, but like there's not really any other
Tominaga is
team that I feel is good about.
Tominaga is definitely up high on the list of guys. Like, if you're betting on who's going to hit a big shot in this tournament, Tominaga he's way up there. And yeah, we talked about him on multiple pods earlier. Like, we're just big fans of him. And it's awesome for the diversity of the game, too, to see a Japanese national playing out like that. Like, it's just fantastic. One of the other things we were talking about, we were laughing, is there's a chance that Nick Saban's Alabama Crimson Tide could lose in the second round to a for-profit university, which I find just absolutely hysterical. I see Grand Canyon beating Alabama in the second round, and then Nick Saban's head literally exploding as he watches it happen. He's like, just the destruction of the very fabric of the college system in poor Nick Saban's mind, I think would be hysterical. And then another one that I was looking at was, you know, for both a Big Ten piece and a Pacific Northwest piece, Scott, which is, if Dan Monson beats Arizona, what the hell does Long Beach State do then? They fired him, what, 4 games ago? And he just keeps winning. And now,
yeah,
like, what if Long Beach State beats Arizona?
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know why they announced that when they did. I mean, you know, they can come to that agreement or whatever and just be like, yeah, we're going to announce this after our last game. But it's just really weird to announce that, like, before the conference tournament. Like why?
Maybe that was the goal. Like a reverse jinx. Maybe they were kind of like trying to monkey paw this thing and see if they could make it happen. And it worked.
Yeah, Dan Munson, who just has been at Long Beach State for an extremely long time, like he just disappeared there for like because he was, you know, he coached Gonzaga when they made their first Elite Eight run, and then he went to Minnesota and did terribly, which is why he wasn't there for very long. And then he's been at Long Beach State for like 18 years or something, or 17 years, like just sort of like in obscurity. And I mean, this is a guy that had a lot of hype, you know, 20 years ago. And it's just been like really strange that he just hung out there for so long.
I know. And it's like, man, and like, it's so strange. And then the most bizarre ending to the story.
And then, yeah. And then they're like, okay, now we're done. Oh, this is the year we're going to go to the tournament.
Did either of you guys see the Florida center's ankle injury? I heard about it.
Enough to not watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did not see it.
I heard you could hear it, and I was like, no, thank you.
And yeah, you know, that's not good. They're going to be taking on, what, the Boise, Colorado winner?
Yeah.
It's Boise.
I was unreasonably concerned that we were going to end up playing Boise State again.
I was...
Not because we wouldn't win again, but I just was like, nobody wants to see this twice. Like, what do we do?
I thought you were going to say, and this was something that we've talked about multiple times, but concerned about the way that the injuries you know, like the effect of Northwestern's injuries would have on the committee. And we were just talking with someone that, you know, someone in Northwestern circles who we, you know, we talk to a lot, who was basically going back to a place that we've been to, which is like, I don't think anyone thinks twice about any of this if the Jordan Travis thing doesn't happen with Florida State. And I totally believe that's true. I don't believe that it actually affected the committee, but it affected everyone's psychology. And suddenly everyone, even though it's a different sport, people are like, oh man, like, what will they do with injuries? Like, is that going to, you know, how far down is the seeding? Is that going to knock people out? And I think Scuzz has made the point on pods before that there's no precedent for it, but it's just, it's where everyone's brain went. And I'm sure like Florida fans' brains went there, you know, on top of everything else, but it doesn't seem to have affected things too much. But yeah, it's obviously going to affect the tournament.
Well, I heard they're going to. I heard they're reevaluating Matt Nicholson. Yep, his foot is still broken.
Yeah, still broken.
We don't know that, but like again, you can eyeball the situation. It's just like we all saw the same thing at the selection show today.
Yeah, I think you know. I actually spent a lot of time reading about like the selection process this week because I was just like, oh, I'm. Because it doesn't go exactly like how a lot of people think. I mean, there's a lot of like, you know, teams are voted on individually. They don't think about conferences. They don't think about, you know, so a lot of things that, and they just kind of vote teams into the field and then they figure out seeding later. And I think that they actually, one of the things in their protocol is like, if a team has done enough to make it into the tournament, then you vote them into the tournament. And then you think about the injuries when you're doing the seeding process. So, you know, even though I know why we probably have been dodgy about Nicholson's situation, I don't think that that would have had a bearing on getting into the tournament. I think that like they're instructed, like if a team has done enough to get into the tournament, you put them in and then you figure out seeding from there. If they need to drop a seed line or something like that because of an injury, then so be it. But I never thought that was going to ever be a something where we would get excluded if he was declared to be out. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I think maybe it moved us from an 8 to a 9. Like that could be, you know, what the effect is rather than.
But I mean, functionally, what is the difference between an 8 and a 9? There's none. There is.
Yeah.
What
color jersey you're wearing. It's the only thing.
I mean, there was a large Northwestern. I mean, obviously, with the 10s being in the play-in game now, it changes the calculus, but there was a large portion of Northwestern Nation, and rightfully so, who were like, I'll take a 10 because we can beat a 7 and then we don't have to play a 1. And I think that makes perfect sense. But there is some nice synthesis. It is pretty funny that it's like here Northwestern is again in the exact same situation they were in each of the last two trips, which I kind of like that. It's like we all have familiarity. Like we have a familiar familiar NCAA tournament pattern, which that we can say NCAA tournament pattern and Northwestern in the same sentence is like none of us should take that for granted. Scott, something I specifically wanted to ask you, because I was curious about this. Obviously, looking ahead to all of the Pac-12 teams that are moving to the Big Ten next year, everyone talks about football ad nauseum, but it certainly strikes me looking at this bracket that it's pretty light from a basketball standpoint from, you know, relative to those four schools, particularly UCLA. But, you know, I think Oregon's the only representative and that's as an 11 seed. Like, what is the state of those four teams or to the extent that, you know, like those four teams in basketball right now?
Well, I mean, both UCLA and USC were huge disappointments this year. USC actually was thought to be preseason possibly a top 20 or 25 team, and they ended up under 500. They were just awful. UCLA lost a lot, so they knew they were going to take a step back. So I'm not shocked that they didn't make the tournament. Washington just has not really done much. Like Mike Hopkins was their coach for the last 7 or 8 years. I think he didn't take them to the tournament at all, I think. And he just got fired. So they're starting over. Oregon only has 8 scholarship healthy players right now.
Ooh.
And when they had their full, they never really had their full team at all this year. They just got a really, really good player back recently named Nafali Dante, who's a big guy. With him and with the eight guys they have, they legitimately probably were the second best team in that league behind Arizona. So I think they're going to be pretty formidable as an 11 seed. I think when Oregon gets healthy and gets all their guys back next year, I think they're going to be a pretty good team. I think they're going to be the best of the four. I don't know what UCLA is going to do. I don't know if Mick Cronin is going to stick around or take off for another job, or and USC really is in shambles. And I know they expected a lot out of Bronny James this year. That didn't really work out. So I have no idea what they're going to do.
Yeah, it just popped into my head that somehow, like, I hadn't even considered any of these possibilities, but like, Bronny James could be playing in Welsh Ryan in a conference basketball game next year, which just is hilarious to me. Things that I haven't even put my brain in that place yet. But that it is interesting, though, that like for whatever reason, they just weren't up right now. But I mean, obviously, like UCLA, right? Like whether it's Mick Cronin or whoever, like they're going to rebound. But yeah, it's just funny. Yeah, like it's only something I just noticed today. I was like, oh, wow, like they're. It's not the Blue Bloods right now.
Yeah, I mean UCLA is still UCLA. They'll get it back, but they're probably like a Michigan State type situation where they might get back into the 8-9-10 conversation next year. But I don't know that they're going to make a huge jump right away. Washington is this kind of they're kind of like Rutgers to me. Like maybe they'll be annoying and win games here and there that they shouldn't. They actually had Bulkehi from Rutgers on their team this year. but I don't think Washington's going to come in, and they're going to be probably a bottom three or four team in the league next year. Oregon could be a top six or seven team maybe in the conference, but I don't think any of these four are going to come in and just be challenging for the top three or four slots in the league right away.
I mean, you gotta go through us if you want that.
That's right.
Yeah. With our point guard we don't know about, but who's going to be an awesome transfer portal addition next year, which I'm assuming we're going to get.
Yeah, that guy.
That's what I'm saying.
He's going to be good.
Hey, credit to Chris Collins. You know, we've said it multiple times, but Chris Collins is cresting right now. And that guy has coached his ass off this year and deserved Coach of the Year more this year than he deserved it last year when he rightfully won it. And like, look, like we have done plenty of hole poking in Chris Collins over the years, through the ups and through the downs. But that dude is dialed in right now. So, If there's a notable guy to be found in the portal, like he's going to find him. And hey, like, I mean, furiously knocking wood, but you know, I'm picturing like two fairly similar players in a lot of ways, LeBron James Jr. and Ty Berry matching up against each other in Welsh Ryan next year would be pretty interesting. And I would say you could look at Ty Berry as the kind of upward trajectory that USC should be hoping they get out of LeBron James.
Really think LeBron James, like Bronny James, is coming back next year? I mean,
he's not getting drafted. So then the question is,
I think he actually probably is. Yeah.
Wow.
I
mean,
the funny thing about him, and this is the thing, is like, I see a lot of Ty Berry in him, and the funny thing is there's so much kind of unfounded hype relative to his results and the name and everything and all the whole circus that comes with it. In terms of the way he actually plays basketball, he's the kind of guy every team wants. He's an athletic hustle guy who just wants to distribute and grab boards and play hard defense. And it's like, that was Ty Berry. And then suddenly Ty Berry got ungodly good at shooting and became one of the Big Ten's top players up until he got hurt midway through this season. So it's like there, I think if I'm USC, I'm hoping for that kind of upward trajectory, but I think, hopefully that's where, again, furiously knocking wood that we get that Ty Berry back next season, because that would make a huge difference.
Yeah, and just obviously, yeah, the getting Ty back, getting Matt, Big Matt back, and you know, Brooks being another year older, and then I think the fact that Langford really succeeded here is going to be a huge selling point, because we hadn't had a, like, we've had portal guys, but not one that, like, really had, like, a huge impact. Like, we had, you know, Verhoeven, and we had, you know, certain guys, but, you know, I remember Ryan Taylor a few years back was supposed to be a big addition, and that kind of fizzled. And so the fact that we can actually point to a guy that's like, hey, Langbor came over here, you know, was a 38-minute game guy or whatever, and, you know, a huge part of the team, I think is going to be a good, gives us hope for bringing in another, like, big-time impact guy from a,
I hasten, probably from a
mid-major.
So. I hasten to add, too, that Ryan Langbord now will have gone to the tournament with two different teams, have been a really big part of helping Northwestern have a really historic period of basketball, and will also have an undergraduate degree from Princeton and a graduate degree from Northwestern. So I'm just saying, to whoever the best Ivy League players are right now, this could be you. Come on over.
Yeah, come on over, because
there's
and obviously no he's been to the Sweet 16, and none of our other guys have. So that's
right. Yet.
Good to have.
Yet.
Have you ever thought about building a Westlaw Pirates-like community for your business? If so, we've got your solution. Teamworks Media, a brand marketing and content company, is here to help you tell your brand story better. Better yet, you can work directly with the founder, Jay Sharman, known on this podcast as Lake Posts. The same expertise he's brought to brands like ESPN, the Big Ten Conference, and Northwestern University are now available to you in an affordable way, directly with this Wildcat superfan. Contact Jay directly at 312-446-9435 or jay@teamworksmedia.com to learn how to elevate your brand story. Real quick, because I don't want to, you know, keep you guys all night. Again, Scott, always appreciate you coming on with us tonight. I would be remiss if I didn't ask the same question I ask every year. Besides James Madison, what other number five is going to go down to a 12?
Let's see.
Well, it's, you know, it's really interesting, because I was shocked when I saw that Gonzaga and St. Mary's were both five seeds. Because a lot of their resume is built on playing each other.
Right.
In the league. And I mean, Gonzaga, like maybe 3 weeks ago, people were saying, oh, they've got to run the table to even make the tournament. And they did, other than losing to St. Mary's in the championship game of the WCC, and all of a sudden they're a five seed. I mean, people were talking about, like, oh, they might sneak in as an 11 a couple weeks ago, and now they're like, I don't understand how they're deemed a top 20 team.
Well, as Northwestern fans, we're all very familiar with the concept of laundry and how it can affect people's
right. Yeah, I mean, it's just funny to me that the WCC teams are getting, like, extreme respect. The Mountain West teams got a lot of, even though they got six teams in, they got a lot of disrespect in the seeding. The Big East didn't get any more than three teams in.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
So, but I look at those teams being five seeds and being like, yeah, I mean, I think they're probably a little vulnerable. Gonzaga to McNeese and St. Mary's to Grand Canyon. I don't know much about UAB. I know that they won their tournament, but I would consider them to be maybe the least likely to win of the 12s. They're playing San Diego State.
Then
I think we've had a year. Was last year? I can't remember. We had a year
where
the 12s actually been on kind of a bad run.
Yeah,
lately,
all the fives so, won. I think last year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so I think the 12-5 is I think we're due for one of those 3 out of 4 12 seed years, which, you know,
and
saying that'll happen. But
Wisconsin is so ripe to lose this game, right? Like, all the signs are there.
There's not a team that has run hotter and colder there's like, how was that team the team that we just saw at the Big Ten tournament, the team that just sleptwalked through the 5 or 6 weeks that directly led up to that period of time? I have no
idea. I don't know. I was like, against us, AJ Storr looked like the best player I'd ever seen. And then,
right.
So I don't know, but yeah, they obviously had a real rough stretch there. And yeah. I mean, they wouldn't have been a five if they hadn't had a nice little couple games there. I mean, beating Purdue, obviously, but
yeah, they were. Sam, my answer to your question in a circuitous way, I'm already on the record, like, for-profit Grand Canyon is going right through Alabama.
Sure.
Special shout out to massive Alabama fan Gary Seegers, who will be with us on the draft pod later in the spring. So shout out to you, Gary. For-profit Grand Canyon's going right through Nick Saban in Alabama.
I also really like the 11s too. I mean, I think New Mexico is good. They're playing Clemson. I think Oregon is good right now that they've got a real key player back who missed most of the year against South Carolina. NC State's maybe they're going to run. They played 5 games in 5 days to win that tournament, so they might be out of gas. But
I'm just going to tell you because it matters, as Sam, in the bowl championship, bowl pick'em series that we do every year, the only person that my daughter didn't beat in that competition was you, who finished first in the competition. And my daughter picks strictly based on what animal she likes more. So I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that she's going to put Zach Lujan's South Dakota State Jackrabbits all the way through to the championship game. So keep an eye on South Dakota State, okay? Because the bunny is going all the way. I'm just pointing it out. If you're looking to make a wild pick, that's what she's going to do.
Does she not have a soft spot for buffaloes?
She does, but nothing beats bunnies. What's Long Beach State? What are they? I don't even know.
They are. Yeah, what are they?
They're not the banana slugs. That's somebody else.
I think they're just called the Beach.
Yeah, they're the Beach.
Yeah, they are the Long Beach State Beach.
What?
the year Barbie goes to the Oscars, Beach is in the NCAA tournament. That's incredible.
Yeah, I was like, they just called Beach. Like, and I think their jerseys just say Beach on them. Like, that's what they are.
Oh my gosh. I want to run to Twitter right now and see if I'm the first person to make that joke, but I feel like 50,000 people will probably already be into it.
A good year for nicknames with the Hatters, with the Beach, with the Dukes, the Jackrabbits. I mean,
yeah.
There's some good stuff here. The Peacocks are back.
The Hatters.
The Hilltoppers are back.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Catamounts, America's team, going to take down Duke and Wisconsin back-to-back games. Let's go UVM.
I did want to also point out Oakland, which is not in California. It's in Michigan.
That's right.
And their coach, his name is Greg Campy, and he's been the coach there for like 40 years.
Wow.
Like, he's just one of those guys that just started out at one place and just never left. Because I think partially they didn't want to get rid of him, and he just decided he didn't want to ever leave. So he's been the coach here since 1984.
So you said he's been at Northwestern how long? What was this again? I'm trying to figure out how this guy is somehow not a Northwestern coach that you're talking about, because you seem to be describing the most Northwestern thing ever.
Yeah. Just like no motivation to get rid of him. I mean, they were a Division II team when he started in 1984. And they just kept him when they went Division I, and he just stayed there, and he won, like, he has, like, a very, very competent 57% win percentage over the last 40 years. So, But yeah, I guess we're, you know, we should be rooting for that guy. He's been, this is his third time in the tournament, or sorry, fourth time in the tournament in the last 26 years since they became a Division I team.
It's amazing. This just, it just feels like a fun year this year. Like there's just like a lot of cool, fun things going on at the same time. And then right in the middle of it is us, which I just find, yeah, just so cool.
It's still very disorienting, you know, honestly.
It is.
To have us in this thing because, I mean, you know, our whole lives, or at least our whole lives since we went to NU, have mostly been without this. And yeah. So just being a huge Hoops fan and just for many years just being like, well, you know, of course we're not going to be in it, but and then to have us part of it is just such a
I know,
is it still hard to get used to, because I remember, you know, like, you know, my freshman year of college and being in the band, and when we won a Big Ten game, it was like a wild celebration that involved us going into the locker room and celebrating with the team. Because we won one game against one of another bad team in the Big Ten.
I mean, I always remember playing Illinois and Aaron Jennings scoring the bucket because Illinois got up something like 30-something to nothing before Jennings finally scored. Yeah, and when Jennings scored, the whole place went nuts. That's where we were. And from there, we've gone to back-to-back tourney trips. It's incredible.
It's been a wild ride, and to be this excited, you know, to be this excited about the fact that we've been a 7, 8, and 9 seed in the last 7 years is like, most people don't understand. And I think that there's you have to have this unique experience that we've had together. And the fact that 95% of our fans are alumni of the school or students at the school, we don't represent a state or a city or, you know, anything like that. So it's like, we do have this very uniquely, you know, for a major conference school, like this very uniquely tight group of fans who have been through a lot and been very loyal through all of it. And so it's when it pays off with something even as seemingly, you know, routine as a 9 seed for many other schools, like it's a nice thing to share with our fans who have been through so much.
Yeah, for sure.
Amen.
Before we let you go, I do want to just briefly talk about the women's tournament. I haven't dove too deep in it, but I did notice one thing that just blows my mind. Iowa getting the 1 seed in the second Albany regional in the same bracket as LSU. So the fact that you're could potentially get the national championship game last year rematch in the Elite Eight, and they didn't set it up to possibly get the Caitlin Clark Angel Reese rematch even later is baffling to me.
Yeah, it is kind of strange. I mean, honestly, a little bit of this is LSU's fault because they were supposed to be a 1 seed at the start of the season, and it didn't really click for them until like a little bit later in the season, but it is still, you're right, it's an interesting decision that they decided to do that.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. So they're having, the regionals are split into 2 cities instead of 4. And so half the regionals are in Albany and half the regionals are in Portland where I live. And I was hoping Iowa would be in our half of the bracket, but they're not, they're in the Albany half. So, I'll still probably go to the games, but it is interesting to have, you know, the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight of 2 different brackets in the same place.
So is the idea that there would be like 1 night of Regional 3, 1 night of Regional 4? Is that or is it like 4 games?
Yeah, I think for the Sweet 16, it's going to be, I think it's going to be 4 games. 1 day and 2 games the other day. So it'll be all of the games.
Oh, so like similar to the opening round games.
Yeah.
Wow.
I will say, Sam, another way of looking at it, and I'm still kind of piecing this together, but if I think one way to read this bracket would be that ESPN, and rightfully so, wants and thinks that LSU is going to go extremely far in this tournament, despite them having a 3 seed. And if you buy into that, this is the most unbelievable bracket ever, because LSU would theoretically play Louisville, Iowa, then either, I think, right, USC potentially and Juju Watkins, or who else?
South Carolina?
And then eventually South Carolina. And I think, like, so you'd be hitting all of those, like, the amount of teams that absolutely hate LSU, that LSU hates, that they would play in this tournament is absolutely incredible. Like, it's what more could you want? Like, they're almost certainly going to play Louisville in the second round. HVL's old school.
Oh,
which,
yeah,
that,
HVL.
That alone is, like, incredible. And then, yeah, like, potentially Iowa right after that. So it's like everything you want.
Yeah, speaking of future Big Ten teams, now USC and UCLA coming on the women's side.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Oh my gosh,
Juju Watkins. Holy moly, you're
is
right.
It's a big deal. Like, she's going to be potentially playing at Welsh Ryan Arena next year. So,
yeah, literally, she's one of the first ones where I'm like, are we going to at least get Juju Watkins for 1 year? She's only a sophomore, but I don't know. I guess probably with NIL, they'll probably keep her as long as they can. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the Pac-12 breaking up really affects, competitively speaking, affects women's hoops probably more than anything else, because there are so many good Pac-12 teams in women's hoops. There's like, because USC is a one, UCLA and Stanford are both 2 seeds, Oregon State's a 3, Colorado's a 5.
Scott, you know,
a lot of really good teams.
Scott, you know who this doesn't sound good for, what you're describing to me right now? You're not painting rainbows relative to Northwestern women's basketball right now. I'm just saying.
It's going to be a harder hole to dig out of. Although, again, Oregon and Washington coming over, they're struggling right now on the women's side. So, two struggling sides and two really, really good teams.
Well, hey, Scott, always, always love having you on year after year. It's, you know, a pleasure to get you back yet again this year to talk about the brackets. I mean, I look forward to this conversation every year, and the fact that we're able to talk Northwestern in it is just the icing on the cake. So thanks for taking the time to jump on with us.
Yeah, thanks to you guys. It's always fun. It was good seeing you guys at the Requiem for Ryan Field back in November, and being able to go down the field after the game. It was a really strange day with the whole thing. Like, they couldn't admit it was the last game or whatever, but hopefully we'll see you guys again at venue to be determined for a football game this year. And
The buzz we're hearing about that behind the scenes is really exciting.
Yeah, knock wood. Some.
So I mean, are we talking about the lake thing?
It's like, possible.
We kind of maybe happen. Like this is
it's let's just say it's gone from something that we were thinking I don't know, it went from one of those things where we were like, maybe it's just too perfect to actually happen, to be one of those things where it's like, whoa, this might actually be gaining some steam.
There is definitely some smoke to this fire. And like, we don't know a ton, but like there could be something there.
Yeah. We're going to keep all of you informed, but it's got legs. Let's just put it that way.
I think it would be really cool if they could work it out. I mean, it seems like a lot to figure out. So if they're able to pull it off, I think that would be cool. I would say I hope that if they do pull it off, that they don't put any stands on the lake side and have the cameras
just the view out
on
the water
side facing the lake.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you actually just see the lake behind. Because we ever see like an NU like soccer game.
Oh, the lacrosse.
You just see the lake, or the outdoor lacrosse games, right? Like you just see the lake, like on your, in the shot. Like, so I think it would be really like really cool if like somehow they could work it out to where it's like a half, you know, just one side and the two ends, and then like the cameras are just looking out at the lake the entire game. Especially when the games are going to be in like September and it should be like nice weather.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. Like I said, we shall definitely see what's happening. But you know, there may be more legs to that than the pie in the sky that we thought it might be. So.
Yeah. Well, man, that'd be great.
Well, once again, Scott, thank you so much for jumping on with us tonight. That'll about leave it there for this week. Head to our website, westlawpirates.com, where you can leave comments and questions. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Westlaw Pirates. Email the show, westlawpirates@gmail.com. For John Lacombe and Eric Scousbo, I'm Sam Walter. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.